The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. The last time we met in June, which was on the 16th, we were exploring the 10 vows of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva and talking about Samantabhadra's 6th and 7th vow, to request the Buddha to turn the wheel of the law and to beseech the Buddhas to remain in the world. Now, one's first thought in doing this is to literally do just that, to go to the Buddha in whatever form we experience the Buddha, whether it be to our temple or to a teacher or to a book, to ask for the turning of the wheel of the law, to beseech the Buddha to remain in the world, to be there and to teach, and then to sit there and wait for the results of one's beseeching and one's request to manifest itself. Does anybody get any results this way? If you do, you don't need to listen to my talk. Perhaps I am a particularly insincere person. I never got results this way at all. So if you don't get results just by asking, and if you find yourself in the same state as you were before you made the request, you will, I hope, have something to learn here today on Sunday. Something helpful that you can reflect upon. The mind, and by the mind, I mean the discriminatory mind, our everyday mind, is always looking outside of itself for some form of satisfaction and entertainment. It's like a dog. You keep it leashed to live, but the moment you let it off its leash, it's gone. It's out there. It's going here, it's going there, it's sniffing this, it's sniffing that, it's doing certain things over here, and it's doing certain things over there. Now, a person who loves dogs knows that the only way you can live with a dog is to train it. And so you train it with kindness and with compassion. I think one of the most essential, perhaps the most essential thing about having dogs is realizing and accepting the fact that a dog is a dog is a dog. And is no different, is nothing else than being a dog. That's why we love them. Okay? They drive us crazy sometimes, but that's why we love them. And in the same way that a dog is a dog is a dog, a mind is a mind is a mind. Our discriminatory mind acts just like a dog. The problem is that it is not as obedient. By mind, I would include, you know, our feelings, our emotions, our ideas, everything. The moment we seem to get settled on something, it's off in another direction. Okay. We can do everything within our experience and our intelligence to bring it back, and to a certain degree, we do that just by the routine of our lives. But when you begin to meditate and you notice what your mind is doing, most of the time, it is off. Sniffing here, sniffing there, looking outside, doing little things over here, doing little things over there. The moment you lose your attention, it's doing that. And even when you are maintaining your attention, it wants to do it. There's always this little imp there that's always ready, just for you to lose your mindfulness. Okay, and it's out, it's moving, it's gone in the blink of an eye. We can do everything we can within our experience and intelligence to change or refrain from giving rise to uncomfortable, difficult, or unprofitable thoughts. And yet, in the twinkling of an eye, you can find yourself drowning in them. One can work for years on a problem, make significant headway, and in 1 second's time, think, speak, or act as if none of the work you had done on yourself had been done. And not only that, if you've done a significant amount of work on yourself, or you've really tried, it's worse because you know you can do better, and you're not doing it. It seems worse because we know better, and after the mileage of having done Buddhist training, we now have 333,333 reasons why this should not be happening. Whereas when we started training, we only had one thought, and that one thought was, I really need to do something about this. But down the road, you get more experience. You think, well, that shouldn't bother me, or my mind shouldn't be doing that, or I shouldn't be having this coming up. But what do if you do? Well, you can go into despair. You can get drunk. You can read books. You can go to movies. You can do arts and crafts. You can exercise harder. You can bury yourself in your work. You can quit your job and get a new one. You can become a bum. You can take drugs. You can make more money. You can lose more money. You can do community service. You can do no service. Just don't get out of bed. You can find a new relationship. You can rekindle an old relationship. You can end your relationships and become a hermit. You can do any and all of these things. Okay. And it changes nothing. Because when the flush of change or impermanence has receded, you will be back in the same situation you were in before, with your mind in the condition that it was in. Just as a dog is a dog, so is a human a human. And the mind is the mind. Just as we love and cherish our dogs, and don't expect them to be anything other than dogs, in the same way, we have to learn to love and cherish our humanity and our minds. And not expect it to be anything other than a mind, but find wise ways in which you learn to take the nature of a mind and train it in such a way so that you are training with it, to bring out the best in it, rather than trying to do something that is against its nature. This is definitely true with animals. It's particularly true with human beings. Because eventually, if one is trying to do something that is not in harmony with one's real nature and is against the nature of minds as minds are, one is going to stop. We have to find a way that works. And also find a way that is something more than another external place to distract itself from what the mind really needs to do. Did I make that clear? The mind needs to find something else, other than another distraction, other than another external place to fix itself and say, yeah, this is it now. Yeah, yeah, I got it. Yeah, 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 yeah. Wag, wag, wag. It really needs help and support from inside. It needs faith. It needs compassion. It needs a purpose. Now, our purpose as Buddhists is training. We are training ourselves, cleansing ourselves from greed, hate, and delusion, making the attempt to convert greed, hate, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom, to train body, speech, and mind to be in harmony with that which we know or we sense to be true within ourselves. So for us, when we want to go for refuge, when we want to go for guidance, when we want to ask the Buddha to turn the wheel of the law and beseech the Buddhas to remain in the world, the first place we have to go, the first place we have to look is within. Because that is where everything happens, and that is where everything will come from. This means for us to meditate. This is one of the reasons why we practice meditation. To be still, to be mindful, to see clearly, so that we may be in harmony with that which we truly know to be true and to be manifest within ourselves. Never is this so important when someone is confronted by the poison of anger. If you'll remember last time, I talked about the way in which one beseeches the Buddhas to turn the wheel of the law. Beseeches the Buddha to remain in the world. To ask the Buddha to turn the wheel of the law is through training. And this requires, or it evokes from us, patience and diligence. Patience is essential to Buddhist practice. And its realm, as it were, the place where it is found, in which it is cultivated, in which it is realized, is the realm of anger, is within the poison of anger. For me, as a Buddhist, what I am learning to do is to train myself so that my first response when confronted by anger, in particular the kind that will arise from within me, but also when I am in the presence of the anger of others, I am training myself so that my first response is to meditate. The virtue of meditation, or the outward expression of meditation, is patience in this sense. This is what we're talking about. There's a distinction, and for the sake of the talk, I assure you it's an artificial distinction between meditation practice and what I'm calling the virtue of meditation, or if you like, the applied practice of meditation in terms of patience. When we talk about meditation, intellectually, we know what the mind of meditation is. I mean, we've all got the book. We can read the book. We know what it says in the rules for meditation. Don't hold on to your thoughts. Don't try to push it away. Okay? Don't grasp. Don't hold on. Don't avoid. Don't run towards. Just sit. Be still and mindful. A couple of years ago, I was giving you a talk about a famous, now deceased, meditation teacher who taught that meditating in this way is like climbing a tree. You don't know that you've fallen out of the tree until you hit the ground. And it's only when you hit the ground that you tell yourself, oh, be careful. You have that split second. Oh, be careful. And then, ah! You know, I hurt. I've hit the ground. Everybody understands what the book says. And everybody understands what the teaching is. But the practice of this is very different. Because when you get angry, and when you get significantly angry, unless you've actually done a fair bit of meditation, you're not sitting there saying to yourself, now, don't try to think, and don't try not to think. Just sit. This is a feeling. My feelings are illusory. I will allow them to arise. I will allow them to pass. If you can do that, you are maturing in meditation practice quite well, as a matter of fact. But many of us, most of us, don't have that first initial response. And all of us, as long as we are still human beings, get angry only if a little bit, once in a while. When anger is really arising, when it's significant, we don't remember to be still and mindful. Our minds are raging. Our bodies are tense. I don't know about you, but my head hurts. My liver hurts. My feelings are inflamed. For some of us, the first reaction is to break something. You don't want to be spoken to. You don't want to talk to anybody other than to reach over and to tear their lips off. And it really seems at such a point that the tranquility, serenity, and quiet of meditation is gone. You know, it's gone, and something in us is wailing in the background, I'll never get it back because of this. The meditative virtue of patience, which is what you get when you apply meditation practice, is really, really important in Buddhism. If you're ever going to read a book, a Buddhist book, by someone who knows what they're talking about, they're going to talk about patience. They're also, hopefully, will speak about patience in regard to anger. One of the reasons why anger is seen as so potentially damaging and dangerous in spiritual life is that if you leave it unchecked, in a moment, And you don't need to be a Buddhist to understand this. In a moment, you can damage all the merit of your life. And you can say things and do things that will take months, years, or even lifetimes to sort out. It says in the Bodhicharya Vatara, a work that's done by a Buddhist saint, Buddhist master, regarded as a saint, named Shantideva, all the liberality and Buddha worship that has been practiced and accumulated as merit through thousands of ages is destroyed in a single burst of rage. Now, you have to be careful when understanding a statement like this. If you don't understand it carefully, you will end up thinking that you are destroying all the merit of your life and training every time you get angry. And that's not what he is saying. It is not what he means. We are human beings, and human beings get angry. And whether we like it or not, that is simply a fact of being a human being and being alive. It's what we think, what we say, and what we do while we are angry that causes the problems and causes the damage to a person spiritually, or does serious damage to their friendships and to their lives. That is what destroys merit. Not the fact that the anger arises, but what we do with it. That's what we have to watch. The precept on anger talks about not holding on to it. It does not say if you experience anger, you are not a bodhisattva who is in communion with the Sangha. It does not say that. It says, do not hold on to it. If you experience a big anger, not holding on to that. A medium anger, not holding on to that. A little anger, not holding on to that. What's a little anger? Being impatient is a little anger. Being irritated is a little anger. It doesn't say you must not have it, or that you're wrong or deficient if you experience it. It says don't hold onto it. I would add, when it arises, as it will, inevitably. We are in exactly the right place and have exactly the right tool for recognizing, accepting, sitting still with, and eventually having compassion for and converting anger. This tool is meditation. If you want to do something about anger, meditate. And know that your meditation practice in doing so is going to be the practice of patience. The last thing in the world that helps is not accepting when anger is arising. I'm not angry. Or usually my response is, no, I'm not angry. I'm not everything. I'm angry. I'm cool. I'm quiet. I'm serene. Where'd that hole in the wall come from? You know. When you're angry, you're angry. It doesn't take any rhyme or reason. You know, when you're pissed, you're pissed. It may be for good reasons, it may be for bad reasons. But when it's happening, it's happening. Okay. There's no sense of it. Most of us would prefer not to be angry, but we're all going to experience it most likely every day in some form or other. So how we see it and how we train with it is really all important. If you judge it and regard it as just another compelling reason why you do not possess Buddha nature, you're not going to get anywhere. I've told people on innumerable times the story of the man who goes to a psychiatrist and he says, "I have a tail." And the psychiatrist is sitting there, and the man's going, "I have a tail, you know, I have a tail." And the psychiatrist goes, "What? You have a what?" And finally gets out of him that, "I have a tail, I have a tail, I have a tail." And the psychiatrist says, "Well, let's see it." So he puts this kind of mousy brown, you know, thing on the table. The psychiatrist looks at it and says, "Not bad." Reaches behind himself and thumps this huge and big thing with yellow rings on it, you know, nicely colored and everything. "See, look at mine. It's just like anger." "Oh, I'm angry. I'm angry. "You're what?" "I'm angry." "Oh, yeah. Okay. We're all angry too." "You know, every so often." "Fine. What are you going to do with it?" That's the thing. Will you train with it? How will you train with it? This is the important thing. Accepting what is, having compassion for it. Okay, what can I do now with this? To help ourselves with anger, we have to see it just as the dog I talked about earlier. A dog is a dog is a dog. Anger is anger. It's going to arise. It's going to arise at times we don't want it to arise. It's going to arise at inconvenient times, in inappropriate places. A mind is a mind is a mind. A self is a self is a self. When I, in particular, become angry, in a sense, it's harder for me. It's not really. Don't feel sorry for me, but I want you to feel sorry for me. I'm confronted by the reality of my unenlightenment. I am not, you know, the blissful sage of the Shakya clan when I'm angry, enjoying the bliss of nirvana. I'm not the perfect sage who is unruffled under all occasions, in all occasions. I'm not, you know, an exemplary monk to show my behavior to the world. I'm a human being who's pissed. Neither more nor less than that. And I have the same koan and the same thing, the same training to be done. If it arises for me, I have to train with it and do the best I can. However unattractive it may be, where I am angry, the very place that it is coming from, that is the place to start. That is the place where you meditate. If you open the Dhammapada, which is regarded as the most ancient of all the Buddhist texts, and is probably closest to what Shakyamuni actually said, the first part of it, first the twin verses, say, "He abused me, he beat me, he robbed me," the list of complaints. And the Buddha saying, this is not, you know, speech like this, attitude like this, this is not what I call a noble one. When we get angry, we're right. You know, we're always right. You know, I'm angry, my will is right. It's so good to be right. It feels so good. You know, later on, don't feel so good. But in the beginning, it's great. You're unanimous. And the degree or the severity of that is that sometimes one doesn't even think of it in those terms. But immediately, I'm angry and it's because of that. You know, this happened, that happened, this person did this, that person did this. And again, we may be, exactly those things may have happened in exactly the way that we perceive them. You know. So what? A very dangerous statement to make. So what? And what do I do now with that? In the midst of every problem, there is at least one good solution. At least one, usually more. In the midst of every difficulty, there is at least one opportunity, usually more. We find the opportunities, we find the solutions by learning to be still and just looking. The poison of anger actually provides many opportunities, but we have to learn to be mindful and to be still when it arises, and to sit still with it deeply enough, long enough, to recognize the solutions and the opportunities that are presenting themselves to us. And unfortunately, doing that is very unpleasant. And yet, that is what there is to do. When you get angry, the best thing you can do is to do nothing. Just sit still. Just sit there. Breathe. Breathe in. Breathe out. Let what is arising arise. Let the anger wash over you. Let it wash through you. The mind is going to be doing what the mind is going to do. Don't try to stop it. Your emotions are going to be doing what your emotions are going to do. Don't try to stop them. Your mouth is going to want to say something. Don't let it. And you may want to do something. Don't do it. Just sit there and let it be exactly the way that it is. Other people may be with you. You know, maybe somebody close to you, maybe nobody. Are you okay? What's wrong? Just sit there. If you have a friend or a spouse who knows the sign, give it to them. Don't press, I'm pissed. You know. Just sit still and let it arise. It is not that you are trying to repress it. It is not that you're trying to suppress it. You're not trying to do anything. What you're doing is you're allowing it to arise, and you are sitting still with it. With great attention, great energy, great vigor, but you're not doing anything to express it. The body hurts, the mind hurts, the thoughts are flailing, your mouth wants to do something, and the body and you don't let it. You just sit there. The first time you ever do this, it is an agony. Okay? But if you can do it, and if you can learn just to sit still with it, you begin to see that it passes. And when you don't try to do something, it passes more quickly and it gets lighter every time. It cannot be as if it were not there, but it doesn't have to be a major thing. It's just that it has arisen. Here it is in my face. I'm angry. Don't hold it. Don't push it away. Just sit still with it. This is the beginning of patience, and it is the beginning of compassion, because you recognize you have fallen out of the tree. You are sitting on the ground, and it hurts. Don't try to make it go away. Just sit there. Because when you just sit there, you will realize with time that the pain is not so intense, that it is passing, and that you can actually get up and look at the tree and say, oh, okay, I got to watch that tree, you know, next time I climb it. And you reestablish stillness and mindfulness. The thing that one has to watch out for is that if you want to say something harmful, don't say it. And if you want to do something harmful, don't do it. Just sit there. Unless you know yourself pretty well when you do this, it's scary. And it hurts. And it works. It's not a, quote, technique for managing anger. It's sitting still. And it's letting the anger be the anger. And you are sitting still with it. There are obviously circumstances in which you can't do that. You can't just sit there. You can't just give the sign. You know? And you have to learn how to do the best you can at those times. But if the response is that as soon as you feel it arising, it becomes a mindfulness trigger. Oh, anger is arising. I'm sitting still. The more you can remind yourself, the more you can catch yourself, the more mindful you can be, the more willing you can be to go into stillness and tranquility, in spite of the fact that all of your feelings and all of your thoughts are trying to push you out. The easier it becomes with time, the less painful, and it actually begins to convert. The less you hold on to anger, the less time it lingers. When we don't hold it, it passes. It's like a summer storm. I was raised in Europe, and we had these storms in the Mediterranean that were impressive. You have this beautifully placid sea, clear sky, you know, 20 minutes later, black clouds. You know, this sea, which never had waves bigger than a foot, you know, that was a big surf day, 1 foot. You know, eight feet thrashing about. An hour later, it's all gone. This is what Reverend Master was talking about in the Kyojin Kaimon commentary. Thus should I be, you know, still, even when there's a great storm going on the surface. What's going on the surface is my thoughts in my body. You know, that's the surface. Your meditation, your place of sitting, is much deeper than that. That's where you go. That's where you sit. That's where you stay. And even though you are experiencing all the very unpleasant biochemical things that are going on in the body when you get angry, they will arise and they pass. They come in waves. The first waves are usually the hardest when they burst, unless you're a slow wave type. You like to go, you know, a little bit here, and then it gets bigger, and then it tapers off. Or you may be the kawam type, you know, and then it tapers off from there. Or you may be the slow burning type, very cold and calculated. Remember that revenge is a dish which people of taste prefer to relish cold. Revenge is just prolonged anger. However it arises for you, and we're all different, it's still the same. To be still, to accept what is there, to allow it to arise, to allow it to be what it is. Do not speak, do not act, until you begin to see clearly, and then to do so carefully, with the recognition that I am angry. One is left with the consequences of anger in both body and mind, but they will be less if you do not express that, if you do not say the things you want to say, if you do not do the things that you want to do. One will have had this, you know, storm, and then it's over. But that will be it. You won't have your immediate physical and, you know, emotional or spiritual landscape littered with corpses or with consequences that you then have to clean up. Anger is a poison. It's called one of the three poisons: greed, anger, and delusion. It is regarded as one of the more difficult to clean up. Nevertheless, those who clean it up, who work on it, have an easier time in the long run, because compassion is something that is deeply established within them. It's the only thing you can do to deal with anger, is to have compassion. Whereas, you know, us greed types, a little here, a little there, you know, it's not so bad, just a little, you know, much harder. In some ways, it's easier to be a greed type. It's more difficult to convert long term. It seems to be more difficult to be an anger type, but when converted, the results are regarded as very, very fine. We are going to be talking more about this as time goes on. I'm going to be discussing what some of the commentaries talk about in terms of anger and its relationship with, you know, what is going on around oneself and with other people. But you want to keep in mind that what we are doing in our meditation practice is we are trying to make our first response meditation. It will not help you if you are considering the point of view, when I am getting angry, am I meditating or not? Don't worry about that. Recognize if, as, and when you are becoming angry, be mindful that anger is arising. The more it is arising, the more careful you want to be. the more severe it is, the less you want to do. The less you want to say, the less you want to act, until it begins to diminish. And when you can see, or when you can then see more clearly, speak more clearly, or act more clearly, then it is safer to do so. The real refuge when we are angry is meditation practice. And we make it a lot easier on ourselves just by saying, you know, yeah, I'm angry. And then training with that. There is a Buddhist master in this country who's dead now, and he said, if somebody with a big temper comes to Buddhism, if they study well, by the time they die, they'll have a little temper. If you come to Buddhism with a little temper, by the time you die, you'll have no temper. Okay, if you train well. We just have to be the kind of beings we are. We're going to experience it in varying degrees, but each one of us will experience it. Meditation, patience, they are a box and its lid.